All right, this is episode 88 of the Corner Sports Podcast, and in this upside-down fantasy football season, we have a lot of things to talk about after a wild week four of NFL action. We got injuries, we have QB replacements, a frustrating Browns loss, and a lot of activity on what looks to be a barren waiver wire. We'll talk about it all next on the Corner Sports Podcast. All right. Welcome back to the Corner Sports Podcast. As I mentioned in the intro, this is episode 88. This is Christian, the Commish Riley. I'm joined by one of my co-hosts, not both of them, but Paul, PK Kaler. Cougs is out suffering from depression from another Browns loss, I think that's why he's out today, but we can roll with two. As Meatloaf said, two out of three ain't bad. Paul, how you doing today?
I'm hanging, man. I drew the short stick and I had to be here because I'm also depressed from the happenings of this Sunday for sure.
We just take turns taking the podcast off after the Browns lose.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. It's interesting, though, that Cougs isn't here after another Browns loss.
It is very ironic.
Are you identifying a trend?
I think I see one.
Huh.
And it's very ironic for the person that predicted them to go undefeated, to go missing every time they lose.
Man,
I think we're onto something here.
Can't show his face. I mean, he can only hear our voices, but he still won't show his face.
But the Browns were the Browns this week, as Juju famously put it. Outside of the Browns, Paul, how was your week?
Horrible. Terrible. It was all the way around.
Terrible.
Just terrible, Kenny. It was just terrible. If you took my fantasy performance this week and my picks were decent enough, but everything involving football this week, you could put it on Come On Man, you could put it on Shaq and a Fool, because it's just terrible all the way around. But
what was more frustrating, the Browns loss or your fantasy week?
Browns, for sure, because it's a winnable game. It's a game that they should win. It's just watching them lose via death by 1,000 paper cuts. Watching the Falcons
death
just
by 1,000 runs.
Yeah, exactly. That's what it was. And it was just abysmal. Just so bad to sit through. I mean, you got guys, Caleb Huntley, who I think they called up from the practice squad on Saturday.
He was a practice squad guy. Is he a rookie or is he just...
I don't know, but Tyler Algier's a rookie, and he shredded us for like 10 for 83 or something. Like putting up like Jim Brown Madden numbers. Not even Jim Brown numbers, Jim Brown on Madden. Like just absurd numbers. You lost to a quarterback that went 7 of 19 through the air. This is 2022. This isn't Norm Van Brocklin's NFL anymore, like where you can go 7 for 19 and win a Super Bowl. Like,
I think really the only time in recent memory that we have seen quarterbacks win a game like this needing to do so little was either A, when Jimmy Garoppolo beat the Green Bay Packers in the playoffs, mm-hmm. completed what, 8 passes?
8 passes it was.
And they ran for like 1,000 yards.
Mm-hmm.
Or the Blizzard game with the Patriots beating the Bills, where
last
they
year.
Threw
yep.
3 passes.
And won.
And won. And then you have a game like today, where the Falcons...
In a dome.
The Falcons beat the Browns at their own game.
Yeah.
This is exactly what we wanted the Browns to be doing to every opponent they played this year.
35-202 on the ground overall for Atlanta rushing. Browns 35-177. I mean, it was just a gashing. Like, Marcus Mariota 7 for 19, 139 yards, no touchdowns a pick. Jacoby Brissett 21 of 35 for 234 yards. So really par for the course for Jacoby this year. No touchdowns, interception. He had the scramble for a touchdown, so he did that. But Jacoby, I still think that Jacoby's doing just fine. You know, 21 for 35 isn't the greatest number, but he's still getting, he's giving you that 230 yards. Not really giving the ball away that much. He threw the pick again this week, but again, that just like in the Jets game when he threw that his other pick.
His interceptions have been in desperation.
Yeah, mode. It was a desperation heave. It wasn't the best throw there. They still had a down to give, so it was a bad pick. But it's not like he's just all willy nilly with the ball. And we know he's going to protect the football a lot. It's just that I mean the defense, man. I know we had no edge rushers. Defensive tackle has got to be, the Browns have to be the worst in the league at defensive tackle. And then obviously you lose Anthony Walker last week in Pittsburgh against Pittsburgh. But none of that is still able to explain A, getting gashed on the ground, And B, they still gave up, that secondary is still giving up chunk plays. Mariota only completed 7 passes, and they still found a way to give up chunk plays for first downs. And
7 of 19 for 139.
That's like, on paper, you're like, oh, secondary, great. But yeah, if you watch the game, no, they converted on third and longs. They converted on long pass plays downfield. Olamide Zaccheaus, or whatever his name, I don't know how to pronounce it, he had a 42-yard catch. I mean, Kyle Pitts had one catch. We'll get to Kyle Pitts later, but even that went for 25. Tyler Algier had a 20-yard catch. It's just, they're still giving up these huge chunk plays through the air. It's just absurd to me.
So if I look at the box score, and I look at the team versus team, every important stat that you would have down the list. First downs, Browns win by 3. Passing first downs, rushing first downs, Browns have the edge in both of those. Third down efficiency, Browns 5 of 14, Falcons 3 of 9, roughly even. Fourth down, Browns are 2 for 3. Total plays, Browns ran 16 more plays. Total yards, Browns had 70 more yards. The Falcons had one more drive than the Browns did. So the Browns had 70 more yards in one less drive than the Falcons did. Yards per play, Falcons 6.1, Browns 5.7. Passing yards, the Browns doubled the Falcons. Rushing yards, Atlanta 202, Cleveland 177. When you look through all of these numbers, I mean, yards per rush, each team was above 5. Rushing attempts, both teams had 35. Red zone, Browns were 1 of 3, Atlanta was 2 of 4. So both teams choked away 2 opportunities in the red zone. When you look at these, it looks like every single category is either favoring the Browns or dead even, except for the scoreboard. Where does the blame go here?
It's got to be on the defense. I mean, I know a lot of people are going to be quick to point the finger at Kevin Stefanski for his aggressive play calling on fourth down. I understand the frustration, but not only do I believe that he is right to make those calls, especially I think it was the first drive of the game. It was the first drive of the game where the Browns got down inside the red zone.
Yeah, I think
they got inside the 10 or the 5.
It was like the 4.
Yeah, and they went for it on fourth and goal, and they didn't convert. And the only problem I have with that is the fact that they didn't convert it. And even then, it's still Stefanski's like, yo, if we don't convert this, we give them the football. A bad offense, we give them the football with their backs backed up to the goal line. There's no reason why there should be any concern with that when you're facing it, a Marcus Mariota. I mean, it's just, but people are quick to point the finger because what's the old saying? You're a genius when your fourth down conversions hit and you're an idiot when they fail.
Yep.
And that's, I think it's very prisoner of the moment. I think it's very reactionary. And I'm of the opinion that I go for it pretty much every single time there, unless it's obviously like a game ending scenario where you can kick the field goal and end it.
Yeah, and we even looked at a guide for the optimal times to go for it on fourth down, regardless of situation. If the decision is between kicking a field goal or punting, or if it's going for it versus punting, going for it versus kicking a field goal. As a fun fact, and when we were doing research before we got on the air here, I read this stat to you. And in an article I found from earlier last year, a team of people from bestballstats.com ran all the numbers and looked at all the situations. The only time that a team kicked a field goal from fourth and goal at the 1 yard line in a non-garbage time situation during the 2020 season was the Chiefs in the first quarter in a week 12 game against the Bucks.
I feel like of all teams to do that, it wouldn't be the Chiefs. Like Andy Reid is such a next level coach.
Now I know that this was fourth and goal from the 4. And not fourth and goal from the 1. But the point remains is that teams, when they get inside the 5-yard line, there is more benefits to going for it early in the game and even later in the game based on situation. But early in the game, when situation's not as much of a factor, there's more benefit to going for it on fourth down than there is to take the 3 points.
Absolutely.
And I don't care that the difference in the game was 3 points. If you make that field goal, the entire trajectory of the game goes different. We may still lose by 3 points. Kicking that field goal or going for it on the first drive of the game did not decide that game. But when you get to the point where you're 4 yards away from putting up 7, you know that you have no defensive line. You know that 2 of your linebackers are banged up and 1 is out for the season. You know that your defense has struggled to this point of late. What do you want on the first drive of the game?
1 point.
As many points as you can get. Not just 3.
On the road, too.
Not just 3, because you know in a game that is figured to be high scoring, because neither team has a defense, our defense is banged up, they just don't have one. You would figure that in a game that's expected to have a lot of points, you would go for it early to get as many points as you can to put your defense in a better spot. And if you happen to go for it and you don't get it, as the Browns did, you should be able to count on your defense to not allow a 14-play drive when the offense is backed up to their own 4-yard line.
I completely support going forward on fourth down there, because I just look at in situations like that, especially when it's early in the game, I think that playing for the field goal is playing not to lose. And
yeah.
I think that going forward on fourth down is... I think you got to be aggressive. I think you have to be. And I know it's not going to be a 100... There's no statistic in the world that's 100% of the time besides death and taxes. And obviously, due to a multitude of factors, they didn't go... Or they went four on fourth down. They failed. And at the end of the day, they lost the game. I don't think it was because of that. I mean, 1-for-3 in the red zone just by itself is just abysmal. You don't see... Like, you just don't see good teams do the things that the Browns did last week against Atlanta. And really, even the trends over... You know, we're at the quarter pole now of the season. We're 25% of the way through, and even, I mean, not to cross sports here, but the old Mark Shapiro quote, you can generally gauge how good your team is at the quarter point of the season. And just looking at the trends now, it's just it's not looking good for the Browns. The defense is all out of sync. I think the offense is doing its job. It's holding. Like, if the defense was doing what we thought the defense would be doing a month ago, the Browns would be 4-0 right now, because the offense is holding their ground. The Browns aren't losing because of the offense.
No,
Browns aren't losing because of the play calling, even. They're running the damn ball.
Yeah.
Nick Chubb is RB1 in standard and half PPR in fantasy right now. The stats are there. The offense is not to blame for this. The offensive line is doing its job. We're getting more out of Jedrick Wills than we thought we were going to get at the beginning of the season. I have no qualms about the offense whatsoever. But the defense, it's letting them down left and right. We're losing bad games to bad teams. And no, really, like, the Browns season is, it's two parts, right? It's pre-Deshaun and it's post-Deshaun. And it's almost like we're having two playoff races this season, because we all set expectations on what the Browns need to do this first month of the season. We all coming in at 2-1 to Atlanta, a bad Atlanta team, a beatable Atlanta team. It's as close as I've ever seen to a must win on the first weekend of October.
Yeah, ever. That's what I was going to say, is it feels like, knowing that all you want to do is just hand the ball to Deshaun with a chance to make the playoffs, it felt like these four games that you really, really wanted to be 3-1. So it felt like this game was a quote-unquote must-win game. In reality, mathematically, was it a must-win game?
No.
Absolutely not. Because we can look at the standings today, and the Browns would... I know it's October, it's the first week of October, but to prove a point here, if you look at the standings today, if the season ended after 4 weeks, the Browns would make the playoffs based on tiebreakers.
They would win the division.
Win the division based on tiebreakers right now. So it wasn't a must win, but the fact that our division has played so poorly and has started, like, Pittsburgh sucks. Cincy lost a game to Pittsburgh.
Who sucks?
Baltimore
can't hold a lead.
Baltimore cannot hold a lead, doesn't have it together yet. Their defense looked like they suck. And here we are with the Jets and the Falcons ruining what should be a 4-0 start by a combined 4 points.
What's your take? So you say the Jets and the Falcons ruined it. What is your... So the most unpopular man in town right now is probably Joe Woods.
Yes.
What's your take? Do you think the Browns need to make a change at defensive coordinator? Do you think they need to change defensive scheming? Is it a talent issue, personnel? What's your take on the whole Browns defensive collapses?
There's a lot that goes into it, and it's not just Joe Woods. I know that he's the scapegoat right now. For all of our local Cleveland listeners, I know that you probably point the finger at him 100% of the time, and I know that my uncle has texted me a bunch of things saying this and that about Joe Woods, and that, you know, I see all of the posts in Cleveland Browns for Life Facebook group. I'm a part of every fan base's Facebook group that you can, all 32 teams, I see what the fans are talking about. And when you look at the Cleveland fan group, dear Lord,
yeah,
they want Joe Woods' head on a stick. They want him out of here as fast as possible. And I know that it is the easy thing to say and do. But my question is, who is the better alternative? Who's going to fix? And I know when you look at what this team has done so far, when you look at week one, there were lapses in the secondary that allowed Baker to get Carolina back in the game. Almost lost them that game.
By the way, the 32nd ranked quarterback in the NFL right now.
Correct. That's
Just want to throw that out there.
Yeah.
17.5 QBR or something like that.
It's not good.
Like, it's worse than replacement level.
Yeah, it's not good.
Sorry, Baker Bros.
It just shows that Cleveland made the right move and where they're at right now, but we can get into that another time. So, the defensive lapses in the secondary that allowed Baker to get back in the game. Who knows what his QBR would be if we didn't have those lapses. The inexplicable game against the Jets, which also allowed a deep pass late in the game, and this one cost the team the win, because if they don't get that 60 whatever yard touchdown, I think it was Corey Davis.
Yep.
If Corey Davis doesn't score that fast, the Jets don't win that game. So these mental lapses in the secondary, they're early season struggles. We know that. Last year we saw early season struggles with Joe Woods, and down the stretch, the defense was the only thing that kept us alive.
True.
And then there were still people calling for Joe Woods' head. So I think that he was already an easy target to put any sort of defensive problems on. And yes, those defensive lapses in the secondary were inexplicable. But you look at the Pittsburgh game and his game plan in shutting down a bad, you know, credit to the Woods detractors, Pittsburgh has a bad offense, terrible offense. But his game plan to absolutely shut them down in the second half, the adjustments that they made defensively won them week three. And then I cannot put anything in week four against Joe Woods. I just can't do it. Because you're looking at a team that has just lost their green dot in the middle. True. Anthony Walker, off the field, done for the year. Myles Garrett, out for the game. Jadeveon Clowney, out for the game. Was Perrion Winfrey out too?
Perrion Winfrey was in.
Was in. Who was the third? Because there were three down linemen that were out. Taven Bryant, defensive tackle, out. So you have both of your defensive ends. Taven Bryant, a defensive tackle. Anthony Walker, your green dot linebacker. Chase Winovich, another defensive end who is a key depth piece on this team. And then you look down the list and Greedy Williams is on the injury report as well, injured reserve.
Jeez.
So that's six key pieces to your defense that were all out and have been out. The players that are on IR have been out for a while with the exception of Walker. Greedy's been out. Winovich has been out. Clowney's been out the last two games. Garrett, we know that this is a sudden inactive for him. I don't blame him at all for
what
happened.
That's just a typical Cleveland Browns black cloud.
Yeah, it's a bad luck situation. Hopefully Garrett is back for the Chargers game because they lost their left tackle.
Yeah, that's a big one.
Which is, we can definitely exploit that if Garrett is back.
They have a dinged up quarterback, and rib injuries are no fun for anybody.
So while it is incredibly frustrating and almost inexcusable for the Browns to have double-digit play drives go down the field and score on only running plays.
That's insane.
Inexcusable, insane. There is a reason here why this defense was so bad this week, and I can't put it on the defensive coordinator. I said from the very start, before Clowney even resigned, or even if he would have resigned earlier, I still would have said it, before we ever had a chance at upgrading at quarterback, before any of that, before we even got Amari Cooper, I said from the very start that depth at defensive line was the Browns' number one need. It was a higher priority than receiver. I didn't think that upgrading quarterback was in the cards.
Neither did I.
If I would have thought that Watson was a realistic option, I would have said that that was our number one priority. I didn't think it was a realistic thing, so I put it to the side. And I said that defensive line was our number one need. And here we are, getting gashed double-digit times on the ground to allow scores to one of the worst teams in football.
So with that said, how patient are you willing to be? Like, at which point how long do you give it? Because this schedule, like, we are officially through the cupcake portion of this schedule. And we saw, now, the Patriots aren't scary on paper. We saw them take the Packers to overtime at Lambeau. That's no cakewalk. The schedule, the Browns' upcoming schedule looks like this. It's home Chargers, home Patriots, at Baltimore, home Bengals Monday night, at Miami, at Buffalo, versus Tampa. That's a gauntlet, dude.
Yeah.
Like, those are all extremely talented and mostly, for the most part, well-coached teams.
These next 7 weeks can absolutely bury this team.
Yeah, I'm not going to say it, but yeah.
They could absolutely bury this team. This team could be 2-9.
That's what I was not going to say.
Seven weeks down the road, and it would be a realistic 2-9. Like, I don't think that they will be. I think they're a better team than that, than to lose seven straight. But this is the gauntlet part of the schedule. I think that they can beat New England at home. I even think that they can beat the Chargers at home. Do what I call it likely right now? No, the Chargers are favored by 3.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's going to be closer than people give her credit for right now, especially if the Browns get Myles Garrett back. I said from the very start, all I wanted this team to do was hand the ball to Deshaun Watson with a chance to make the playoffs. 5 or 6 wins. If you get us to that 6 win mark, then you can hand the ball to Deshaun and say, all right, take it the rest of the way. Once you have an elite quarterback, I know it's going to take him a few quarters to get some of the rust knocked off of him. We saw he didn't look good in the preseason against Jacksonville. I don't care. That was one quarter, if that. But when he does get that rust knocked off, and there's no team I'd rather him knock that rust off against than against Houston's terrible team, not even factoring in the fact that it'd be a quote-unquote revenge game. But if you get to the point where you have a chance to make the playoffs in these last 6 games or whatever he can play, that's when I think that, I mean, that's really the only goal right now, is to have a chance in week 13. And as it stands right now, we're going to have to upset somebody.
A couple of times, most likely.
I mean, if I think that New England, if I think we'd be favored against New England, which if we're healthy, I think we are, especially if Mac Jones isn't playing, which is looking more and more unlikely by
the day. You can probably write that down in pen.
So if we can pull... If we don't consider New England an upset, then we would have to upset one of LA, Baltimore, Cincy, or Miami to get to 4 wins before Deshaun gets back. So you're right. We would have to have 2 upsets there. Now, if we beat LA and we beat Cincy, which I also think we can be favored in, I think we can be favored in that game if Cincy keeps playing the way that they've started the season. Because we're at home.
The Cincinnati Zebras, by the way.
Zebras, yes. I mean, they made Miami look bad, but Miami didn't have Tua for most of that game.
Just weird.
So I think we can beat Miami. I think we can beat New England. That means that you have to upset 2 more out of... I'm sorry, did I say Cincy or Miami?
You said both.
Oh, okay. I think we can beat Cincy. I think we can beat New England.
Okay.
Which means that we would have to upset 2 more out of that list that includes Tampa, Buffalo, Miami, and LA. Or Baltimore. Which
probably not going to go to Baltimore and get a win.
Probably not going to do that. So the not taking advantage of this easy 4-week window at the start really hurts this team, because now you're asked to overcome this deficit. You know, if you're playing the schedule game, you have to overcome this deficit now against harder teams.
Yeah, I mean, to ask them to go 4-3 over the next 7 games, looking at that schedule, I feel like is asking a lot. They're going to need health.
Yeah.
They're going to need for the offense to continue. I feel like the offense is almost already playing at its ceiling.
Yeah.
That's a concern to me, because you're going up against teams that are either playoff contenders or Super Bowl contenders or coming off a Super Bowl appearance. You're going against teams that are overachieving. Miami, Super Bowl favorites, Bills, Tom Brady, Buccaneers. It's a daunting schedule up ahead, and it can go one of 2 ways. It can go either this buries the Browns season. Now, okay, so let's say the Browns, worst case scenario, the Browns win 1 or 2 max of these next 7 games. Do you bring Deshaun back?
Yes, no matter what.
Okay.
No matter what, as soon as he's eligible to play, he's my quarterback week 13.
All right. I just wanted to ask, because I'm with you in agreement there, but I think the question is going to be asked, especially amongst the talking heads in town, is even worth bringing back this is your future, is it worth bringing him back for 6 meaningless games? But I do think it's imperative that he gets some, he gets his legs back under him.
Yeah, he hasn't played in 2 years.
Yeah.
He needs to get as much playing time as he can, and whether it means something or not.
I mean,
if we are the quote unquote in the hunt on the graphic at the very bottom right hand corner,
that's where I'm used to us.
As long as it still says that we're right there, you're putting all your faith in Deshaun Watson, because not only did you give up everything to acquire this quarterback, but you need to be ready for him to be your guy going into next year.
Mm-hmm. And this isn't like, don't get it twisted. This is like the final 6 games of the season, even if they mean nothing, it's not an assessment period. Like, no. Deshaun's the quarterback. He's
no
going
what.
To be the quarterback for...
He can look awful
don't
the
care.
Last month of the season. It doesn't matter.
It's going to make for a long offseason, but still, do not care. He is the Browns' starting quarterback this year, starting in week 13 and beyond.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just that.
Yeah, period. But speaking of AFC North quarterbacks, there was a change at the helm of one of our AFC North rivals this week. We're talking about little baby hands over there
little
in Pittsburgh.
Old baby hands.
Baby hands Pickett over there in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Trubisky wasn't getting it done in a loss to the Jets, which we know well. Now they can't laugh at us for losing to the Jets. But he replaces Trubisky. Do you think that the spark that we saw in the second half of that game is the spark that this Steelers offense will receive from Kenny Pickett going forward?
Well, they certainly need a lot. They certainly need more than a spark at this point. 1-3, three straight losses against all really beatable opponents. You look at the Patriots, the Browns, and the Jets. Crazy that they even could get a win week one against Cincinnati. But it's definitely, this is the point now where we see the Steelers in rebuild mode. And yeah, they do need a spark. They need a change. Mitch Trubisky is now a veteran quarterback. He's shown that he's probably at best a career backup, maybe a solid backup. But, you know, shout out to Cleveland boy. He went to Mentor, I know that. But yeah, they need something to change, and they need something to change fast, and they need to see what they have with Kenny Pickett. And let's just say that Kenny Pickett's terrible. Now they can go the final three quarters of the season, and if they need to assess that in the offseason, I know it's an extreme scenario. They just drafted him in the first round, but you're looking at the great quarterback class coming out over the next year, next 2 years in college. So it's definitely an assessment that needs done. They've got a rookie target in George Pickens that they need the quarterback to gel with. They've got a young tight end. The offense has pieces that can be fantasy relevant, especially, but you want your young rookie quarterback trial by fire. It's already looking like a lost season for Pittsburgh. Throw him in there and see what you got, because what else do you have to lose this season if you're Pittsburgh? You're not used to being in this situation. You're used to stability. You're used to having talent on the offense. You're used to coasting at least to the end of the season for a playoff spot, one way or the other, whether it's a division championship or a wild card spot. And this is uncharted waters for Mike Tomlin and the Steelers. So I think go with the young guy, throw him in there, see what you got, and go from there.
And they're definitely used to coasting to wins against our team, which yeah, they you're welcome. Are no longer doing.
Crazy.
And I actually think it's going to be I'm very curious to see what happens in Pittsburgh this upcoming week and every week after that, because I really don't have a lot of faith in Kenny Pickett or any part of this Steelers offense. And a lot of that is because of a piece of their team right now that Steelers fans absolutely hate, Matt Canada.
Yeah, that's a big one.
If you look,
Steelers fans might hate Matt Canada more than Browns fans hate Joe Woods.
I was just going to ask you which one's more hated. Who's the most hated man in the AFC North?
It's bad.
I would say it's Canada.
Yeah, they're very loud.
And the crazy thing is that their franchise is known for not making in-season firings,
like rash decisions like that.
They're not used. They don't do it. It's not the Steeler quote unquote Steeler way.
Okay.
It's not the way that they do things, but I think it's going to be to their detriment this year, because if you have a first round pick, whether I thought he was a first round talent or not is irrelevant. I make fun of Kenny Pickett a lot because of my lack of faith in him. I would have more faith in him if he had a better offensive coordinator, because a lot of times where I would look at a player going to the Steelers and I'm like, you know what, this is going to be great. This is going to absolutely ruin them. And throughout time, the Steeler way has just found a way to keep them winning time and time again. I was so happy that they brought Big Ben back last year. I was so happy because everyone that has ever watched a game of football knows that he was spent. He was done. But the Steeler way found a way for him to just do enough, whether it's a crazy non-tie at the end of the season or any crazy amount of ways that they won throughout the season, whether it was special teams touchdowns or pick sixes from Minkah Fitzpatrick, mm-hmm. or the drunk game that we talked about against the Browns, where the Browns are winning the whole time and it's like you black out. You're like, what happened? Mm-hmm. Oh, you just lost. The Steeler way, they've always found a way to win. And right now, I think the Steeler way is going to keep them from winning right now. Because if you're not upgrading this offensive situation, I don't know what you're doing. Because you have a rookie quarterback, you have one of the worst offenses in the league, and you have a 2023 draft class loaded mm-hmm. with quarterback talent. What happens if the Steelers are a 5-win team, 4-win team? What happens if they decide, what happens if TJ Watt comes back and re-injures the same pack as soon as he comes back, and their defense is still struggling to complement or carry an abysmal offense? What happens then? Then you're staring down the barrel of a top 5, top 8, top 10 pick in a loaded quarterback class.
Yep.
And you just spent a first round pick on a guy who just led you to 4 or 5 wins. And I know that all around Pittsburgh right now, they're saying, whoa, Peyton Manning threw a pick on his first pass.
Yeah, that's a very popular. And it's crazy that they go straight to Peyton with this.
They go to Peyton, they go to Andrew Luck, and there was someone else that threw a pick on his first pass. And they're like, well, these guys did it. Why can't Kenny Pickett be the next Joe Montana?
But you want to talk about, I mean, obviously they're facing a very similar schedule to we are, and now they put Kenny Pickett in. His first career start is going to be in Buffalo against the Bills. You want to talk about trial by fire. They're going
Pickett's
through
going in their gauntlet.
Yeah, this is going to be a hell of a test because they're in Buffalo. They host Tampa. They go to Miami. They visit Philadelphia. They get the Saints in a week that should be winnable. They get Baltimore or Cincinnati after that. And then, yeah, I mean, you want to talk about trial by fire? I think they're going to find everything they need to know about their quarterback over the next couple of months here. And it's a very valid question that you bring up. Are they going to stick with the Steeler way? Are they going to commit themselves to consistency and not give up after a year if he struggles? If he struggles mightily, I'm talking about if he's like a 500 quarterback, or even a near 500 quarterback, I think that job is locked up. But if they struggle, if they look as bad as they've looked over the last few weeks, and if they lose games in bunches like they've done over the month of September and into October now, they might have to swallow their pride and just be like, hey, we have a Bryce Young right here. We have a CJ Stroud right here. And they might have to move on to it from a rookie quarterback, which is totally, like you said, the opposite of the Steeler way. I mean, it's interesting times in Pittsburgh. The defense outside of three guys, Cam Hayward, TJ Watt, Minkah Fitzpatrick, there's no defense.
No.
Offensive line, it's improved this year over last, but marginally, and it's still bad.
I'd say barely.
It's still bad. And they've got, I mean, look, on paper, they've got young talent around. They've got playmakers. They've got Najee Harris. They think they've got something in George Pickens. I don't know. I think they're in a time of uncertainty that we're not used to seeing really in our lifetimes. Over the last couple of, really since early Bill Cowher days, maybe, we haven't seen this kind of uncertainty in Pittsburgh. And I don't know how it's going to end, but I'm enjoying the ride right now as a Browns fan.
So from a fantasy football perspective, because, I mean, that's obviously the takes that we have from a rivals standpoint on the Steelers situation right now. And I think that Steelers fans are just as nervous as they have been during any quarterback change, which, rare as it may be for them, I understand why they're nervous. But from a fantasy perspective, if you're a Najee Harris owner, or if you're a Deontay Johnson owner, or if you have shares of George Pickens, what is your thought with this quarterback change?
I think I'm probably,
what does it mean for their offense?
I think I'm probably most concerned if I'm a Deontay Johnson owner. I don't think that those two are quite on the same page. I think he's got something with Pickens, and I think that he's got the typical like young / mediocre quarterback safety blanket there in Pat Freiermuth. I think that Freiermuth gets a big bump in PPR leagues, and he's already performing. He's performing pretty well as a tight end so far. I think he's going to get a bump. I think you're going to see George Pickens get a bump. I'm concerned about Deontay Johnson. I'm not concerned about Najee Harris. He's still going to get his gigantic workload. Like that's just going to happen, especially in an offense now that's leaning on a rookie quarterback. You're going to give the ball to the running back a lot. For the offense as a whole, like I said, I think it's Freiermuth is probably the biggest immediate benefactor. You're going to have big boom and bust weeks from George Pickens. Deontay Johnson is where I'm concerned. I'd say if you can sell him right now, I would go for it.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. It's a double-edged sword because on one hand, you do know that rookies tend to favor the tight end position. They tend to throw more to the running backs, take less chances downfield. But on the other hand, I feel like they made this switch specifically to move the ball more downfield, because the biggest gripe on Trubisky was the fact that he didn't take chances and he didn't risk it to move the ball actually down the field. He would check down, be safe, don't turn the ball over, live to fight another day, live to punt. And that was what ended up getting him benched in Pittsburgh. So with that mindset, do you have that mindset factored in at all to selling Deontay, or could this possibly be an upgrade for him?
It could be. I mean, you see, but I just feel like Deontay's game just meshed so well with Ben's throwing ability and his style. Like he like the short out routes, I just feel like they were so much on the same page. I'm a little bit hesitant until, like, that's like a you know, believe it when I see it type of thing with Kenny Pickett. You're looking at a young quarterback, got his own cadences, the whole offense is getting used to that, and I don't think he has quite the same repertoire, or quite the same, what's the word I'm looking for? He's not on the same page with Johnson as Johnson was with Ben. And I think that there might be a relationship that takes time to grow, and maybe, I mean, flip the script a little bit, maybe you can buy Deontay Johnson low right now and hope that in a few weeks' time they do develop that pattern there. that Deontay kind of had with Ben, because that's a quarterback wide receiver combo that back last year and the year before, they always knew where each other was.
Mm-hmm.
There was no question about that. That's why Deontay Johnson was a PPR monster while Ben was there. Maybe Kenny Pickett can establish that type of relationship with him. If you think he can, then of course I advocate for buying low right now, because that's going to come into fruition in a little bit if it does work out. But
it is worth noting that in this Jets game, Deontay Johnson's target share went down from double-digit targets in each of the first three games, 12, 10, 11, respectively in those three games, to only four targets against the Jets.
I just think that Deontay Johnson's route style plays at a higher level than Kenny Pickett's talent is capable of supplying right now.
Okay. We're going to see if that pans out there. The next biggest storyline, I'd probably say, or this may even be a bigger storyline than Kenny Pickett in Pittsburgh, was week four was... And before I even say what this storyline was, let me just preface this by saying that for anyone that has ever watched Stranger Things, this fantasy season feels like we're in the fucking upside down world.
Can't relate. Sorry.
Can't relate. Haven't seen it.
Somebody else out there can.
For anyone that has seen Stranger Things, or for me to explain it to my partner here, basically there's a normal side of the world, and then basically this weirdo opens a portal into the same world, but everything's kind of upside down, and it's like this dark area where there's these demons. And...
Oh, so like when you drive down the turnpike towards Pittsburgh.
That'd be it.
Okay.
But basically, they call it the upside down world, where everything is just flipped and upside down, and this is the darker side of everything that you see around you. I feel like that's this fantasy season, where everything's upside down and darker, and I don't know where I am.
You ain't kidding.
And that leads me to... this next topic that I said would be the bigger storyline than Kenny Pickett this week, week four injuries. And before we even got into week four injuries, we already had Swift, ARSB, Kamara, Dak, Jameis, Thomas, Allen already hurt. This has been a season full of injuries, and on top of a season of very popular picks being disappointments, I don't know how fantasy owners can have any confidence in their rosters right now. As I said before, I feel like I'm upside down in fantasy land. And these types of seasons happen every so often where everything you think you know, you don't know anymore. And it just proves to you that this game is constantly evolving and is unpredictable. Once you think you know it, you don't. And to add two more curveballs onto the entire craziness that 2022 has been, Javonte Williams tore up his entire knee, all of the L's, all of the CLs.
ACLs, LCLs, PCL,
all of them.
HDL, whatever.
HDMI.
The cholesterol.
All of them.
Or something, yeah.
He tore his entire knee up, done for the year.
Also tore my heart open, but that's...
Yeah, same. He was a very popular pick of mine. I had him, I think I had three shares of him.
I think he was my most rostered running back in all of fantasy.
And then Jonathan Taylor, ankle injury.
Tough.
Don't know the severity, but they have a short week this week. He may miss week five.
Probably bet on him missing. He missed practice on Tuesday.
Highly doubt he's going to
play. He misses practice on Tuesday. They said he was in a boot on Tuesday.
You had a team that had both of these guys.
I actually, what I thought was my best team coming out of draft day, I was looking to repeat as champion in that league. I have this monstrosity of a trophy to show for it, that I won the championship last week in the Looney Bin League. And I came out of it with JT as my first pick. I had Javonte Williams. I had Lamar Jackson. I have Travis Kelce in that league. I'm thinking on paper.
That was everything that I would want in a first four rounds.
I'm thinking on paper, I look pretty damn good. And I might not have any running backs. You know, Jonathan, like this Thursday, I'm probably not going to have any because I'm not anticipating that Javonte is out there. Not anticipating that Jonathan Taylor Thomas is out there. Javonte obviously done for the year. So that just, you go from hero to zero in a fat second here in fantasy football. And it's just crazy to see that just such an unpredictable unpredictable year so far in fantasy.
And we're only a month in.
More so than I think we've seen in most other years. You look at, Josh Jacobs is RB9 overall. Clyde Edwards-Helaire, doing what you finally thought he would do. Those of us who've been patient enough to wait with him, his third season now, he's sitting at RB4. Somehow Jamal Williams is sitting at RB3. I'm looking at half PPR rankings here. And Saquon Barkley, RB2.
Yeah.
Crazy.
Barkley was a very popular pick from the very start who had that high potential. So
but still
it's not
playing,
like,
still outplaying his ADP by a bunch.
And then you look at players like, you have to the zero RB enthusiast credit, your top receivers, Cooper Kupp, Stephon Diggs, Tyreek Hill, Justin Jefferson, Jalen Waddle. Marquise Brown was a little bit of a surprise. But then, Jamar Chase is up there. Lamb's up there. Debo's not killing you. They're all way up there. You look at the running backs for the season.
It's a death zone.
And it is just, there's nothing.
Miles Sanders is sitting at RB8. Cordarrelle Patterson is going to be, they just put Cordarrelle on IR, if I'm not mistaken. He's sitting at RB11 going into week five. James Robinson, RB12. Yeah, he's an RB1 right
now. James Robinson, who everyone thought was going to be the backseat to Travis Etienne. Mm-hmm. Cordarrelle Patterson, Khalil Herbert, Damian Pierce. Above players like Joe Mixon, Leonard Fournette, DeAndre Swift, Kareem Hunt, Jonathan Taylor.
RB21, Jonathan Taylor.
All for anyone who puts a lot of stock into drafting running backs early, your season's upside down right now.
And that would be probably every single guy on this podcast.
That would be us.
Yep.
And it is a lot of people will point to and be like, oh, told you so. Told you zero RB is the way to go.
Yep.
But there's a long season, but it is not off to a good start for a lot of the high drafted running backs for this season, including Javonte Williams. So he tore up his knee, done for the year. And the first question I wanted to ask you before we get to possible replacements, is there any confidence in Javonte Williams for 2023?
I'm going to probably resort to Bill Belichick right now. No, I'm not a doctor. You have to ask the medical teams.
That was actually a very good response. That was well timed.
MCL, ACL, we call plays.
All the L's. There's an L in Seattle.
We got Seattle, Tom Brady and Lawrence Taylor, we got L's here. But no, seriously, that's a traumatic knee injury. Like, it's not just an ACL. No, it's an ACL, it's an MCL.
His entire knee.
And I like to think that with modern technology where it's at medically, he is able to bounce back from that, but for the whole knee to be torn up, that's a huge concern. If it was just an ACL, it's one thing. It's concerning now, and I got beef with the Broncos, man. Like, it's documented. I think that I'm not a fan of how Vic Fangio used him. I'm not a fan of how Nathaniel Hackett has used him so far, and we've seen them regret the way they've used him. I'm not going to say that that has directly led to him getting hurt in such a bizarre fashion, but man, I'm just so mad at the Broncos. Like, they have all these weapons at their disposal, and they can't figure out how to move the football down the field. They had their best offensive week this week against the Raiders. I get that, but yeah, just really not a fan with how they've handled Javonte Williams so far.
It was very frustrating that I was never really on the Javonte bandwagon. I wasn't anti-Javonte by any means coming out of last year, but I wasn't necessarily as excited for him as many people in the fantasy community were. There were a lot of people that said, oh, he had the most broken tackles in the league, and he averaged this amount of yards after contact, and all of these metrics going down the line. I don't have these numbers right in front of me, but these are the things that I have read and seen where people were hyping up Javonte. And then the Broncos get Russell Wilson. And I'm thinking to myself, that's a good offense. I'm betting that Melvin Ingram starts out with a 50-50 timeshare and works his way down.
And it was finally happening too.
And it was starting to happen. Ingram can't stop fumbling.
Gordon.
That's right. Melvin Gordon. Sorry. Did I say Melvin Ingram?
You said Ingram twice.
Well, he's on the defensive side of the ball. But Melvin Gordon can't stop fumbling. He has all of these issues. He's in the doghouse, supposedly, with the coaches. And then this hits. And just when the excitement was starting to get to a peak and start to make you think that the hype was worth it, he may be out not even just into the rest of this year, but into next year as well. And with an entire knee torn up, we saw J.K. Dobbins have the same sort of injury last year, because I think he tore multiple things in his knee too, right?
Mm, it was pretty bad, yeah.
It was ACL, like MCL, PCL. I think it was multiple of those. I don't have the, I'm not a doctor, as Belichick said.
Talk about football here. Talk about football.
But his recovery was brought on slow, and he is just now coming back a couple weeks into the season. I think this is an injury for Javonte that will last into 2023. And hopefully he doesn't have any setbacks, because if he has any setbacks in this recovery, it may ruin his entire 2023. He may be off my draft board.
Yeah,
in redraft leagues for 2023. Is it a buy low for Dynasty? Maybe.
There's always risk involved. It's a gamble. Yeah.
But this is a situation where it was one of the promising young backs in the league, where his type of hype on fantasy football Twitter was kind of in the baby stages of where we saw Swift's hype 2 years ago. I think his hype would have reached there with a couple of good games and some production if the Broncos would have ever figured out their offense. But now that he's out of the picture for this season, who is the beneficiary that fantasy owners can look to for the rest of this year?
I think that we see the Broncos continue to make it a timeshare. I don't think there is a legit number one in Denver right now. You have, I mean, obviously the obvious answer is going to be Melvin Gordon, who's already on, what, 80, 90% of rosters across fantasy.
Because he's not going to make anyone's waiver pickup for this week.
I think he's the immediate benefactor, but even still, they went... Immediately, they picked up Latavius Murray off of New Orleans practice squad. I think that he's going to make a name out there, or they're going to use him a decent amount. Mike Boone is currently the RB2 on that roster. It's an ugly situation. I think that speculative ads between, I'd probably put Murray a little bit above Mike Boone because we've seen Mike Boone in these backup situations and he hasn't produced.
That's what I was going to say. I think it's very interesting that Latavius Murray can get promoted from the practice squad for the Saints, step into the game in London, mm-hmm. be productive, score a touchdown.
11 for 57.
11 for 57 and a touchdown. That's what, 12 fantasy points?
13.
13 total. Fantasy points. So just walks in off the street, scores 13 fantasy points, gets demoted, and then instantly gets signed. He was their first priority right off the bat. I think that tells me that the Broncos have a plan mm-hmm. for Latavius Murray. They saw him get demoted, and they think, yes, he's not even Gordon's handcuff. I think he's going to work into a timeshare with Gordon. The people that own Melvin Gordon right now are thinking, okay, yes,
yep,
full workload. Gordon has fumbled in every game this year, and these coaches in Denver do not trust him right now. It's evident. I mean, and multiple of those fumbles were scoring drive killers
yep.
inside the 10-yard line, inside the 5-yard line.
Did he not also drop a pass, too? Either way.
Many mistakes were made.
Jesus, man. It's just like, as a guy who's been on the Javonte bandwagon for so long now, it feels like so long. I know it's only been like a year, but still, I can't help but think, I'm not blaming the Broncos coaching staff for getting Javonte injured, but I feel like if he already had the established load that I think he should have, I feel like things might be different. That's all. But yeah.
I think bad luck is bad luck.
It is. It's bad luck.
The fantasy gods just peeing on you.
This is just me overthinking it.
The golden shower from the fantasy gods. God,
glorious. Like facing Alvin Kamara when he puts up like what, 5 touchdowns in championship week or whatever it was the one year.
Yeah. And I have him in a league where in one of my leagues, to tell you how rough this fantasy season has gone. Round 1, Kamara, 100 yards, no touchdowns in 4 weeks, 2 of them active. Round 2, Javonte. Round 3, Kyle Pitts.
Jeez.
My quarterbacks in later rounds were Dak Prescott and Trey Lance. Both of them gone. And in the middle rounds, my wide receiver 2 was Allen Robinson. And that team is 1-3. And you can tell why. The only successful pick I had out of those was Jalen Waddle. That was it.
That's brutal.
And that's a 1-3 team.
Maybe even lucky to be 1-3.
Yeah.
That's brutal. It just goes to show you how topsy-turvy of a year it's been. And for Alvin Kamara, screwing fantasy owners, by the way, with the Sunday morning scratch in London. So a lot of people weren't even up when he was scratched.
Yeah.
There were plenty of people that started Alvin Kamara and had no idea that he was
widely started in a lot of... How do you handle... Let's make this our last topic of the day. How do you handle London games? Because we have another one this week. Green Bay plays the Giants. Now, whether you love them or hate them, that's the conversation for a different day. How do you handle fantasy players that are playing at the 9:30 a.m. slot in London?
I guess you just treat it like another Thursday game. You move all the London guys out of your flex spot, right? You put whoever's playing early, you put them, if you got Romeo Doubs playing this week for Green Bay, you take him out of your flex spot and move him into a starting wide receiver spot because you still got to anticipate late scratches for the 1 o'clock and 4 o'clock window. I think you treat it the same way you treat a Thursday night game. It's really that simple. You take those guys, the Thursday night guys, we all know, you take them out of your flex. Same thing for 9:30 a.m. Sunday guys.
Yeah, I would definitely treat it the same way as a Thursday game. And I think that this points out how fantasy owners should really be checking their lineup every day from between Tuesday and game day. If you don't want to check it on Monday because there's no moves to be made, sure, that's fine. I'm curious enough to see if I won. But from Tuesday, you're making waiver claims. On Wednesday, you see if those claims went through, see if your opponents made any mistakes. Thursday's Thursday night football. Move your Thursday night guys out of the flex and into their regular spots because you want to have flexibility on game day. Friday and Saturday, you're monitoring injury reports because in this situation, like we saw with Alvin Kamara this week, Friday he was unknown. which makes you check to see if there's any update on Saturday. And if a player is playing on Sunday morning in the time slot we all hate because no one wants to wake up, if you don't have any reason to wake up on a Sunday, you need to be up before that 9:30 just to see if there's any surprise inactives, because there were many, many fantasy owners that got hurt by a positive Friday injury report only to get changed on Sunday morning, and you're taking a zero in your RB1 slot. And to prevent this, the only way that you can prevent this is to be constantly, you have to act like you have to take one look at your team every day. And if you take one look at your team before each kickoff on Thursday, on Sunday, and then right before the Monday game, just for a late inactive there, is what you will never have the Alvin Kamara situation happen to you. I know that it's harder to wake up just to check your fantasy team on a Sunday morning. Maybe you're out drinking the night before, but in this scenario, it could have saved fantasy managers a lot of wins.
Yeah, I think really the main thing here is just being attentive. It's not even as much proactiveness as it is just staying, you know, I mean, every website that you're on, whether it's Yahoo, it's NFL, it's ESPN, it's Sleeper, it's Fantrax, it's whatever.
Turn on the Shefty notifications.
Also that, you have so many resources at your disposal. Actually, it's probably been like a couple of years now, but I do have tweet alerts sent to my phone from Adam Schefter, because mm-hmm. Adam Schefter always, every Saturday night, Adam Schefter sends out like, so-and-so is inactive, so-and-so is active.
So-and-so listed as questionable with an ankle is expected to play on Sunday.
And that's...
I'm on weekends, as many people that have listened, I've mentioned it before on this podcast before, on most Saturday nights, I'm driving Uber. And if I drive late enough, I'm up when Schefter starts tweeting the Sunday morning inactive.
At like because, 5 a.m.
Yeah, it'll be like 4:30, 5 a.m. Yep. I'm on my way home from making a couple trips, and just out my phone will start lighting up, and it'll be Schefter. It'll be like, Arizona wide receiver Marquise Brown listed as questionable with this injury is expected to play versus the whoever.
Uh-huh. Ultimately,
and he sends out like 10 or 15 of those.
He does do that. Ultimately, it just comes down to doing your homework. You got to be attentive, and that's how situations like... Now, it's a terrible case of timing. Absolutely. I'm going to grant you that. We're not all up at 9:30 a.m. checking inactive reports for the London game. I understand that. But that may be the difference in winning and losing fantasy matchups. And down the road, losing a win here, gaining a loss there, may be the difference in making the playoffs in December. And I think that just being attentive, all of these resources are at our disposal. Every player has notes on them. It's as simple as checking those before lock. It's really a habit. Just mm-hmm. check players' notes before lock, especially if there's any hint of them being questionable for a week, because strange things happen. Guys have gone out for stubbing their toe walking down the stairs at the hotel or something, like crazy stuff.
Yeah.
Well, you know, that's, you know, air quotes on that one, but still, just as simple as just staying on top of it.
Yeah. So that will wrap up episode 88. Episode Dez Bryant. Episode Michael Irvin. You have any 88s to add?
Nah.
Oh, no famous Browns 88?
Nah, I haven't looked one up for today.
But that's 88 for the Corner Sports Podcast. As always, you can follow us on all of our socials. We have Corner Sports FS on Twitter, The Corner Sports on Instagram. Search up Corner Sports on Facebook, as well as the Fantasy Football Corner Facebook group. If you're listening to this podcast on Apple, Spotify, or SoundCloud, feel free to like and review. Lots of our podcast segments end up on our TikTok as well. That's at Corner Sports. So feel free to leave your comments on any of those. All of our TikToks go up as reels on our other socials as well. So if you follow one, you get all of our content, but feel free to follow them all, whichever one's your favorite. This is episode 88, a Cougsless episode 88. And Paul, I'll leave you to sign us out here before I insert a little peace out from our third wheel.
Yeah, you heard the man. You know where to find us. Tell a friend to tell a friend. Shout out to Reggie Langhorn, Cleveland Browns legend at number 88.
That's your 88.
My 88. Cleveland Browns legend, Reggie Langhorn. I got not much else to say. Go Browns. Let's get a win this week.
Go Guardians.
Go Guardians. Shout out to the Cleveland Guardians for clinching that AL Central. And by the time this week, the Guardians should clinch the AL Wildcard division.
Going on to the division.
Divisional round. Yeah. So go Tribe, go Guards, go Browns, and Cougs.
Enjoy it. Love your neighbor. Support local business. Peace out.
Why don't you I mean, at least I'm trying. I may be tanking, but I'm trying.